We are glad to present your speaker, Ray Weddington.
As we left this morning in our study, Jesus had gotten word that his friend Lazarus was dying. Of course, Jesus knew by this time he is already dead. He lingers two more days before he goes back into Judea. He announces to his apostles that he will be going there. They're hesitant to go back into that enemy territory, if you will, where Jesus is a wanted man, and they, by extension, would be wanted as well. So they're up and they're ready to go. Thomas has led them in their courage and said, "Let's go back." So we begin with verse 17 of the 11th chapter of John. The Scripture says, "Then when Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days already." As Jesus journeys to Judea, to the town of Bethany, to be with Mary and Martha, we're told an interesting fact here. As Jesus arrives, Lazarus had been in the grave already 4 days. Now, this is a very significant point that we need to make note of. And it shows and goes to the wisdom of God. Have you ever thought why he lingered 2 days? He lingered 2 days in his 2 days journey. That's 4 days. Lazarus has been dead 4 days. Why did he wait 4 days? Why not three? Well, it seems that the Jewish thought was this. The Jews considered a person truly dead after the third day. See, they had this thought that even though the spirit left the body, that for 3 days, that spirit would come back and check on the body to see if it could be revived, to see if it could be resuscitated. But on the fourth day, the body begins to decompose. The body begins to smell. So the Jewish rabbis had taught them this philosophy, that for three days, it was possible for that body to be revived. So that's why we see the wisdom of God delaying up until that fourth day. On that fourth day, everybody would know with an assurance and a certainty that that person was dead without any hope of revival or resurrection. So Jesus comes. Lazarus has been dead 4 days. Verse 18. Now Bethany was nigh unto Jerusalem, about 15 furlongs off. We told this morning how close it was. 15 furlongs is exactly 1.875 miles. Little shy of 2 miles. Located on the Mount of Olives, southeast of the city of Jerusalem. And because of this close proximity of Bethany to Jerusalem, we see in verse 19, "And many of the Jews came to Mary and Martha to comfort them concerning their brother." See, as we discussed this morning, it's probably possible, in all probability, that this was a wealthy family, an influential family. And the crowd of people that gathered to comfort them came out of Jerusalem because it was close. And they went through different stages of mourning. Such was the Jewish tradition. Now, they went through a period of what's called heavy mourning for 7 days. This is when they carried on with their crying, their wailing, their intense grief. But following this period of 7 days of heavy mourning, they went into a period of 30 days of called light mourning, when it would just be more silent and more tears that would be shed without the heavy grieving and crying and wailing that went on during their ceremonies and during their mourning. Now, we know as individuals, some of the most hardest times we'll have in being with other people is when they've lost a loved one. It's very difficult to console someone during this time of death and grieving. We know that we've all have been up to funeral homes and been out to graveyards, and it's very difficult at times. I know when I was preaching at Pleasant Cove, and we had a lot of death, and I wanted to try to find out just the right words to say that would bring people comfort and would heal them and bring them a little peace of mind. And I want you to know, I searched and I read and I read and I searched and I looked all over. And you know what I found? There are no perfect words. There are no perfect words to heal that hole that a person has in their hearts. But I tell you what we can do and what we need to do. We need to be there for them when they die, when they've lost a loved one. We need to be with that family. We need to hold them and we need to love them and we need to cry with them. Whatever it does, whatever it takes to give comfort to that family. Because that is the time they need us most. And I've heard people say that, well, I avoid the funeral homes. I just don't go because I just don't know what to say. Friends, you don't have to say anything. There's so much comfort and it speaks volumes by just your presence. By just going up to them and putting an arm around them and let them know in their time of grief and worry and sorrow and pain, you're there with them. And you're there just for them. And you're there just to comfort them. Such is the case, and this is what we're studying tonight. As Jesus is coming to be with Mary and Martha after the death of their brother Lazarus. Been in the tomb for 4 days. They're being comforted by the people around them as well. Now, verse 20. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him. But Mary sat still in the house. So Mary and Martha were in the house. All the people who were comforting them were all around them. Somehow Mary gets word. Jesus is here. She rises and goes out to meet Jesus. Now, we're wondering, what's Martha going to say? What's Martha going to say to Jesus? We know she's been full of sorrow and grief and loss and disappointment and she doesn't understand why Jesus showed. What is she going to say to Him when she sees Him that first time? Look what it says. Verse 21. Then said Martha unto Jesus, Lord, if thou had been here, my brother had not died. Now, I do not think, knowing how much she loved Jesus, I do not think that was said accusatory, with a finger pointed in His face. I think it was said as a declaration of love. Lord, I know that if You had been here, it had been different. He wouldn't have died. It's a declaration of her faith in Him. And what He could have done. Things would have been different if You would have been here. Because she says in verse 22, but I know that even now, whatsoever you would ask of God, God would give it unto thee. She said, I know you could ask anything even right now and God would give it to you. This shows a woman of great faith. Now, I love Martha. You know, Martha sometimes gets the bad rap because of the time when Jesus visited in the house and Mary wasn't helping her. Mary was sitting at the feet of Jesus and Martha was going about the cooking and the cleaning and getting things done. And she kept looking at Mary and Mary wouldn't do anything to help. And finally she just got so upset she started complaining to Jesus and said, make her help me. Martha gets a bad knock. But we need the Marthas of the world because I've noticed the Marthas of the world what gets things done. I've noticed the Marthas of the world are the people that take charge. They do things without being told what to do. They just see jobs, cares, things that need to be taken care of, and they just roll up their sleeves and they do it. I love Marthas. I know we've got many good Marthas in this congregation. I've seen them in every congregation. Do good women who just instinctively know what to do. You take care of things. You put people under your wing, you mother them, you take care of them, and you care for us. And I thank you, Marthas. You are good women. Martha here is a woman of great faith. She says, Lord, I believe. I know things would be different if You'd been here. Even now I know God will do whatever You ask of Him. That's a wonderful declaration of faith. Now, Martha's faith is in the face of everything that she's been going through. In the face of her sorrow and grief, she still makes this declaration. Because Martha knows one thing. Martha still knows and remembers that she's the servant and Jesus is the master. And that's the relationship. That's the relationship we have today. We're still the servants. God is still the master. Martha remembered that the will of the servant is not the goal. The will of the master is everything. You know, we today, we sometimes get that mixed up. We fail to understand that it's God's will and not our will. We fail to understand that we're to serve Him. God's not there to serve us. We sometimes treat God as if He were a genie and He's only there to grant our wishes. And we go to Him only when we need something. We're the servant. He's the master. Martha recognizes this and goes to Him. And she recognizes truth. Not my will, but Thy will be done. Martha knows and accepts, though she is deep in her sorrow, her loss, her pain, her grief that she's going through, she knows that Jesus is Lord and Master. And that's an exhibition of great faith on her part. But she makes this declaration, and Jesus says to her in verse 23, "Thy brother shall live again." Now, Martha is probably receiving this as if it were words of comfort, that Jesus is trying to console her and comfort her and say, yep, your brother's going to live again. Just like we've all have made those generic comforting words that we give at the funeral home when we're with the family who's lost a loved one. If they're members of the kingdom, we'll usually say that he's in a better place, or he's not suffering now, or he's home with God. They're little generic comforting phrases that I'm sure we've all said at one time or another. And we can imagine that Martha is probably thinking this is what Jesus is doing. She's probably shaking her head. Yes, Lord, I know. He shall rise again. And because Martha says in verse 24, says to Jesus, I know that He shall rise again in the resurrection of the last day. We see that she knows this and she believes in this. She believes in the resurrection and that there will be a time when the human body will be resurrected. She said, I know my brother will be resurrected again. I know that he shall live again. But Jesus says unto her, verse 25 and 26, notice this. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believest thou this? Jesus asked Martha, do you believe this? Do you believe that I am? That's an interesting concept. Jesus makes several declarations throughout the Gospels of He being the I am. Reminds us back to the first time when that was used, when Moses was in the wilderness and he came upon that burning bush. And God says, I've got a plan for you. I want you to go back into Egypt and lead your people out of bondage. Moses begins to make those excuses. And then he says, you must go back to your brother. And he said, well, who shall I tell him sent me? Remember what God said? He said, tell him that I am sent you. Jesus declares to Martha at this time, I am the resurrection and the life. Jesus says, I am the one who gives life. It is because of Him that we have life and can have life eternal. It is because of Him and who He is, the great I am. Life in Christ, life given to those who were once spiritually dead, now live again. And those who are dead at one time in the future when Christ shall come again, they shall all rise again. Jesus says, I am. Now we as humans, we get it into our head that death is the end. That death is the end of all. And we don't mention it. We don't talk about it. Oh, we'll talk about anything. We'll talk about recipes and we'll talk about sports and anything you want to, but don't talk about death. And we try to avoid it. We'll do anything. We'll pamper our bodies. We'll do anything. We'll diet. We'll exercise. Anything to stave off death. Why, we want to live forever. Because we measure and we define our life by our losses. You ever thought about that? We as human beings, we define ourselves by our losses. Because we're in some state. I've lost my mate. Or I've lost my job. Or I've lost my health. Or I've lost my family. That's what defines us. How are you? How you doing? Well, I've lost. Well, I've lost. But Jesus tells us, it's not about the losses. It's not about the losses. But it's the eternal life that He gives that defines us. It's what we have. What we have in Him. Because He is the resurrection and the life. We can have life and have life eternal. That's what defines us. Because we're His children. Because we're His heirs. Jesus is the giver of all life. And He wants us to know that although believers may die, that is, no longer live upon this earth, but they will never die in the most important way. Death is not the end. Death is just a doorway for the believer that leads into eternity. So in that sense, we never die. We continue our life from here throughout eternity. So Jesus said, those of His, those believers, those faithful, they're never going to die. That's a beautiful thought. And it's all made possible because of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. He wanted Martha to know this. He wants us to know it. He asked Martha, believest thou this? We ask ourselves, do you believe? Do you believe this? But notice verse 27. And she said unto Him, yea, Lord, I believe that Thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. I love Martha. Did I ever tell you that? I love Martha. You notice what she says here? She says, yea, Lord, I believe. I believe what? I believe You're the Son of God. I believe You're the one that was prophesied to come. I believe You're the Messiah, the Anointed One, the one that we have been spoken of by the prophets. You are the Son of God. That's a wonderful declaration of faith, of belief. Does that remind you of somebody's? Of Peter's. As he made that great confession. When Jesus wanted to know, who does man say I am? Who do you say that I am? Peter said, thou art Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus said, blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonas, for flesh and blood has not revealed it unto you. Who revealed it unto Martha? Her faith and her belief in God. Love this woman as she makes that declaration of faith. Yes, I believe. Now, let's move on. Verse 28, and when she had said this, she went away and called Mary, her sister, secretly, saying, the Master is come and calleth for thee. And as soon as she heard that, she rose quickly and came unto Him. Now Jesus was not yet come unto town, but was in that place where Martha met Him. The Jews then, which were with her in the house and comforted her, when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, she goeth into the grave to weep there. Martha goes back to Mary. Apparently Jesus tells Martha to send Mary to me. He's not yet into Bethany, staying outside of town. He doesn't want to stir up the crowds. And Mary hears that Jesus is here. She jumps up, as Mary would, and she shoots out the door. Well, she's got all of these people surrounding the sisters that's in offering them comfort, and they see her going. It was a common practice in that day that those who had suffered loss of a loved one, that they would go to the tomb numerous times throughout the day, and they would cry and they would wail throughout that experience. So they just assumed that Mary was going there too. But we see in the next verse here, in verse 32, then when Mary was come where Jesus was and saw Him, she fell down at His feet, saying unto Him, Lord, if Thou had been here, my brother had not died. Now notice what Mary does. Doesn't say Martha fell at his feet, but what did Mary do? She bows. Now I can see Mary just clear my mind's eye. She's on her knees and she's got her head bowed and touching the ground. We're going to see in a minute she's going to be crying her eyes out. She's going to be grieving. She's going to be wailing and crying and she's going to be in anguish. See, she suffered the loss of her brother. But she falls in front of Jesus and she says the exact same thing that Martha did. They must have been saying that to one another. Lord, if you had been here, he wouldn't have died. I believe it's a declaration of faith in Jesus. I don't believe it's an accusation. But notice, she uses these ifs. If. No time do we hear more ifs than up at a funeral home. If you've ever sat with a family that's lost a loved one, they always go through the ifs. If only I had done this. If only I had said this. If I had, if. It seems like that's the time when we look back on our life and we look back with sorrow and regret and thinking that we could have changed things or done something different. I know my brother died back in 88. And up until the day Mom died last year, she never got over that. She would, even with her Alzheimer's, she'd still remember that. And she'd say, if we'd done this, if we'd done that. Friends, I want to encourage you and urge you at one time and one thing. Don't fall victim to the ifs. Don't fall victim to the ifs. Because things wouldn't be changed. It wouldn't have been any different. Don't blame yourself. Don't get into that rut of doing that. And the best way of preventing that from ever happening, the people that you love and hold dear in your life, tell them that you love them and accept that love from them. Because I want to tell you right now, the greatest thing that can be said about any of us on this earth is that we loved and we were loved in return. If we've got that, we've got it all. If you've got that and the people that you love are around you and they know that you love them and they told you that they love you, that's it. Then we can face what life holds for us. And we can face death. And we can handle it better. And there won't be any of these what ifs and if onlys. We know I love them and they love me. And that's a beautiful thing. But notice, verse 33. When Jesus, therefore, saw her weeping, Mary at his feet, and she's just sobbing, and she's bowing, and she's weeping, and the Jews also weeping. See, they had followed her. They said, giving comfort, they're crying too, which came with her. He groaned in spirit and was troubled. Now, this is an interesting phrase. What did he mean by that? This has been defined as a groaning in spirit and troubled as a deeply moved. Outraged in spirit, disturbed, bristled, angered, disgusted, agitated, full of indignation. Something had stirred up Jesus. What was it? Well, if you read various commentators and various thoughts and ideas, some would say it was directed at the people around him, their lack of complete faith. Oh, they believed in him, but there was not a soul there who believed that Jesus could raise Lazarus on the fourth day from the dead. Not a soul believed that. Some would say that's what got him bristling. That's what got him agitated. That's what got him upset. Others say it was because of death and what death has done to the world and how death causes people to just go through such pain and anguish and suffering. And that this reminded him that just in a few more days down the road, he'd be facing his own death as well. So, and Jesus did not look forward to that. We know that he prayed, "Let this cup pass away from me." So that was not something he was looking forward to. And that death reminded him of all this. And that's what made him bristle. Whatever it was, he was troubled in spirit. So he says, verse 34, "Where have you laid him? Where's Lazarus at?" And they said unto him, "Lord, come and see." So we can see them point to the tomb and taking him there. Then we read verse 35. Jesus wept. And this wept is not wailing, it's not moaning, it's quiet tears falling down the face. Silent tears. See, it tells us that Jesus was touched by these individuals, by Mary crying and all the others there with them. All this crying and grief. See, He knew in just a matter of minutes, what was He going to do? He was going to raise Lazarus from that tomb. He knew it was going to happen. He knew that those tears of sorrow was going to turn into tears of joy in just a few minutes. And yet, what did He do? He cries. He cries with them. You know, I've used this passage many a time to try to comfort people and let families who lost loved ones know that the Lord cares. Because that same Jesus who stood with Mary and those who were comforting her and cried with them, He cares just as much about you today as He did about them 2,000 years ago. The same care, the same love is directed towards each of you during your moments of loss as well. And that's a comforting thought that we have as Christians. Now, Jesus wept. Verse 36. Then said the Jews, "Behold, how they love Him." But verse 37. And some of them said, "Could not this man which opened the eyes of the blind have caused even this man should not have died?" So we have two classes of people here. See them? Those that believed in them and those that were His enemies. Those that believed in Him, they said, "Oh, see how He loved Him." And He did. But what did His enemies say about Him? "Oh, well, if he could heal the blind, He could have done something about this. He didn't have to die." See, they wouldn't even acknowledge His great compassion and love. Verse 38. Jesus, therefore, again groaning in Himself. This is hurting Him. Groaning in Himself, cometh to the grave. It was a cave and a stone lay upon it. We picture that in our mind. We see what the tomb, the rock-hewn tomb. We see the stone that's there in front of it. Now notice what Jesus does. He tells them in verse 39, "Take ye away the stone. Roll it away. Now Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he had been dead 4 days." Martha said, No, Lord, you can't. You can't roll that stone away. That stone was placed in front of that tomb for one reason. To keep death inside. You don't want to roll that stone out. The body is already beginning to decompose. And it stinks. But look what happens. Jesus said unto her, verse 40, "Said I not unto thee that if thou wouldst believe, thou shouldst see the glory of God? Didn't I tell you this? Did I not tell you that if you just believe, you're going to see the glory and the power of God?" Well, what happens? Verse 41, "Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. And Jesus lifted up His eyes and said, Father, I thank Thee that Thou hast heard me, and I knew that Thou hearest me always. But because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that Thou hast sent me." Jesus is going to do something. And he's praying to God before He does it. He said, "Lord, I'm glad that You hear me. And I know that You do. But I'm telling You this one more time, so that the people that are standing by me can hear and to see, and they will believe. They will know that You are God, and they will know that I am the Son of God." So He commands that stone to be rolled away. And notice what happens. "And when He had thus spoken, He cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth." Can you imagine what it would be like? Place yourself right there. You're the ones there outside that tomb. And you're looking and you see that darkness of the tomb. And you think you see movement? No. That can't be happening. Then you look at one another, and then out comes an individual. We read in the next verse here, "He that was dead," that's Lazarus, "came forth, bound head and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about him with a napkin. Jesus said unto them, Loose him and let him go." Lazarus came forth. A great miracle. He had been dead 4 days. His body decomposing. His spirit gone from the body for 4 days. Jesus rose the dead. Lazarus, 4 days from the dead. We can see why Jesus delayed. We can see why He took those 2 extra days. We can see why He didn't heal Lazarus from afar. Because this was a great miracle. that is still being told and talked about 2,000 years later. What Jesus did. Notice verse 44 and verse 45. And many of the Jews which came to Mary and had seen the things that Jesus did believed on Him. Many believed. Jesus asked Martha, "Believest thou this?" That's still the question. That's still the question 2,000 years later. We read, on that day, many seeing Lazarus come forth from that tomb, they believed that Jesus is the Christ. That they believed that He was the Son of God. The Messiah. The Anointed One. Do you believe? Do you believe that the only way to the Father is through the Son? Do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? That He died upon that cross, shed His blood, rose again on the third day, and now sits at the right hand of the throne of God as our intercessor? Do you believe? Do you believe that Jesus is the resurrection and the life? If that belief that you have in Christ prompts you to obey the gospel, won't you consider it tonight? Won't you consider that if you're outside of Christ, that you obey Him and put on Christ through baptism? Or if you're a child of God and you wandered astray and you want to be back into the fold and have that loving relationship, you need to be restored into your first love, won't you consider it and won't you come?